We're taking your calls right now at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546.
Online tonight. And I'm here tonight to stand up for the rights of other nerds.
And now, from the craziest city on the planet, this is Online Tonight, on the air toll-free at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. And now, the host of Online Tonight, Max.
Welcome to Online Tonight. I am Max, and here on Online Tonight, we talk about tech news, pop culture, random thoughts about cool and nerdy things. We take your tech questions, or you can share what has worked or not worked for you in the technology area, or some of the video games or movies that you're watching. And we love to hear from you. The best way to reach us is via phone, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. Of course, we also take your text and email. Text at 951-395-1017. And our email address is show@onlinetonight.com. Of course, I am joined by Victoria. Are you there?
I'm here.
All right, just a little sideway to make sure that everything is working. So thank you so much.
Check, check, check.
In tech news, TikTok is testing a long-awaited in-app shopping feature, which is weird because TikTok actually started in China as a service called Douyin. Hopefully I didn't completely butcher that in Chinese, because I don't know any Chinese other than xie xie, which I think means thank you. But if you speak Mandarin, feel free to correct me. I'm happy to be corrected. But that service in China has had ads and in-app purchasing. But TikTok is now testing in-app shopping features, and they have already rolled it out in the UK and Indonesia, and it should be coming to the United States here shortly. E-commerce has, again, been a long-time focus of TikTok in Asia, and it is it has worked with other companies in the past, like Shopify, but they're trying to bring in some of the technology that they've been using successfully in Asia for quite some time. Well, one of the biggest complaints, of course, is that depending on the electric vehicle that you have to find the appropriate charger. Because for whatever reason, Tesla has always had their own proprietary charger type, where I believe Honda, Ford, Toyota, and others have had a universal type of plug, so that you can just go to any charging station, regardless of which EV you have, and you can get this charged. Well, Tesla's, I guess, feeling a little bit of the pressure, and they have now decided to open up their charging connector in a bid to become the North American standard. I think they're a little bit late, considering that several of the other automakers have gotten together to already kind of offer a standard for people. But Tesla doesn't want to be left out, so they have asked that their connector type, their supercharger network, would be available to all of the EVs, starting as soon as those car companies decide to use their connector. Well, they've already... I feel like this is a little late on the technology side. Sometimes when you're a leader in a field, if you want to become the standard, you might want to offer your connector to other people. Yes, I understand that it might breed competition, which could affect your bottom line, but then you wouldn't be in the place that Tesla's in right now. And Tesla's right now is you can't use a Tesla supercharger for your Chevy, or for your Honda, or for your Lucid, or whatever other electric brand that you're using, because they were very Apple-esque about it. This is our interface, this is our connector, and we're not going to share. And now they're like, well, that might have been a boo-boo. And so Tesla is now trying to convince everybody to switch over to their format. Again, a lot of the automakers have invested in their own connector and their own network of charging stations. So why would they want to make a change? If you're part of one of these automobile companies and you have any insight, I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to share, 1-800-39-ONLINE. In more tech news, Meta, formerly Facebook, has decided to cancel some of its upcoming developments because they're having some financial problems. They've spent over $15 billion on the virtual reality world with development of content and content deals and new headsets and developers and all that stuff. And so they haven't had time to really work on some of the other things that they had in development, or they have had time, they just don't have the money anymore to continue to fund those. So some of the things that have been on the chopping block recently, other than, of course, the employee layoff from last week, is that they are going to be canceling their health and messaging-focused smartwatch. I think they're also feeling a little bit of pressure from Samsung. First, we had Apple Watch, then we had the Samsung Galaxy, and then, of course, Google came out with their watch. Fitbit has a watch. And I think that Meta, formerly Facebook, is feeling the pressure of how are they going to make a dent in this market. And maybe it's better for them to focus their money in an area where it makes sense for them in the virtual reality space. And people have said to me in the past, just friends at cocktail parties, what is really the big deal of VR? What is going to make VR interesting to us? And I just found a perfect example that would work, because I have relatives and friends that live on the East Coast over there in Dulles. I used to work with a couple great guys there, and we used to go to concerts together. But I'm out here in California, and we don't necessarily get together very often. It's usually a trip. I have to fly out to Florida, or they have to fly out to Vegas. Everybody has to kind of move, in a way, travel to get to a central location so that we can all party together in a good way. Well, this is a perfect example of why VR might work. Meta has just announced that the Notorious B.I.G. virtual reality concert will be available later this year, and in celebration of 25 years of Notorious B.I.G.'s death, they are going to hold a hyper-realistic avatar of the artist in a virtual reality concert, and it's going to be coming to Meta's VR platform and Facebook. My recommendation for them is do the VR stuff first, and then later on, for those who didn't get to participate in 3D, they should allow them to then watch kind of a replay in 2D later. Kind of reminds me of like the iHeartRadio concerts or certain award shows where they happen live, and you know, they tape the best parts, and then later on you can watch it on regular television. I think that's what Facebook should do here. But I can be in California, they can be over in Dulles, or my friends in Florida, or my friends in Minnesota and all the in Texas and all that stuff, and we could say, hey, we're all going to meet at this concert. And we can look around and we can see each other's avatars standing, you know, three or four rows back as we're watching a Notorious B.I.G. concert. And this is a perfect example, I think, of what value VR has. Because with Zoom and FaceTime and things like that, we don't need a VR environment to have a cartoon character of ourselves when we can just fire up a local video and chat with each other. But to experience something like a music concert in a venue that you can't necessarily get to, VR is perfect for that, I think. What do you think VR is good for? Give us a ring, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. I am Max. More on online tonight. Stay tuned. Geek Speak. This hour's Geek Speak, where we bring technology and we try to make it simple, in simple terms. One of them that we rely on all the time and never really think about it is a technology called the RTC, or the Real Time Clock. If you've ever opened a laptop, or you've ever opened a some alarm clocks even have these where you have to put a battery in them. And one second. That's weird. Where you have to put a battery in them, or you have to not just plug them in. But part of that is that... I'm just going to kill that because it's driving me batty. RTC, real-time clock. It is a combination of a chip that contains an oscillator, a crystal, and requires power. And what its primary function is even when a device is on, or if there's a power outage, or you turn your computer off, or you shut your laptop down and the battery dies, there's a secondary little battery in there that keeps the clock chip powered so that it can keep time, so that when you turn it back on, you have the time. Now, these things aren't exactly perfect. I mean, they're going to be off a few seconds every couple days, or you know, up to a minute off every month. But that's why sometimes we synchronize with these things in the on the internet when we start up our devices. But your alarm clock at home, as an example, if there's a power outage or you take an alarm clock camping, it needs power to keep the clock circuitry together. And that circuitry is called the real-time clock. And that is this hour's Geek Speak.
Online tonight.
If at first you don't succeed, destroy all evidence that you try. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
All right. Again, thank you so much for joining us this week on Online Tonight. My name is Max. You give us a ring, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. I usually like to share this week in history when it comes to technology. If you remember, on a past show, we discussed daylight savings time and how that came to be, and how it was invented, and how certain states, at least in America, use it and don't use it. But you may never have really thought about the time zones that we have in America. And on this week in history, actually November 18th, 1883, the North American railroads, the train people, the people who would bring people from the East Coast to the West Coast, or goods from Central to either direction, doesn't matter, they are the ones who invented time zones, and it reshaped our entire country. Let me give you an example. Prior to 1883, they used what was known as the noon time in that town, and it was town-focused. There was a person in the town who was responsible for kind of telling you what time it was, like a town crier back in the old days. You know, they would say 6 o'clock and all is well, and that way you could kind of say, okay, now I know what time it is in my town. The problem was, because it was based on a person's interpretation of where the sun was at noon, this could get very confusing. An example is, in New York, it would be 12:06 noon. And in Chicago, it would be 12:17. That's completely crazy and would completely mess up train schedules. So the railroads got together and they said, okay, we're going to create these four zones: Pacific, Mountain, Central, and Eastern. And the railroad is responsible for that. And that happened this week in history, November 18th, 1883. So we have the railroad to thank for our time zones. I like space, and I'm always fascinated by what the rovers do. I understand we just sent up another rover that's going to be going on the moon. I'll probably get the name of the ship wrong because it was delayed so often. It was Artemis 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever, right, Miss Victoria? If you know the answer, just jump in. But the rovers on Mars, I found to be very interesting, and I even made for my... I just did a storyboard for it for one of my video classes where the Mars rover discovers something Well, NASA rover recently discovered a duck on the surface of Mars. Now, if you go and you go to NASA, all of the pictures from the Mars rovers are available for free on the NASA website. You can check them out. And because they were funded by taxpayers, you can actually use them in your own art and things like that, because they're most all of them are in the public domain. And they found a rock. And based on the angle that the rover was and when it took the picture, it kind of looks like a duck, a mallard duck. You're there? We hear you. No? Victoria?
I wasn't there.
Oh.
That wasn't me. You're hearing things.
No, I'm hearing your mic arm, or I'm hearing your clicking.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, do you know the name of that other rocket that went up this week?
Artemis.
It is Artemis. 1, 2, 3, 4? Not sure?
Not sure.
All right. No worries. And so it's kind of fun to see that NASA has found a duck on Mars. And that brings me into one of the things I think are cool, and I think animals are cool. And I found this one interesting. At the Rosamond Gifford Zoo, which I believe is in New York, they had an extremely rare occurrence. They bred two elephants, and they had twins. Less than 1% of elephants have twins. So this is very rare. And because an elephant is so hard to use ultrasound on, they tried to use ultrasound, but it doesn't really work very efficiently. They were there helping the elephant give birth, and the first calf came out and weighed like 200 and something pounds, 240 pounds. And then within an hour, another one popped out. It was a little bit weaker. It was a little bit smaller. It was only 220 pounds. But it is the rarest of things that occur at the zoo is for elephants to have twins. But if you're interested in twin elephants, then head over to Syracuse, New York, where you can check out the new pair of twins that were named Molly and Doc. Oh, no, that's the parents. I'll find out the name of the twins for you in just a moment. Online tonight. Stay tuned.
Live tonight, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546 is the number.
Online tonight.
If you can disconnect emotionally, it's really quite sad. In his own way, he's reaching out for a friend.
Not that you should feel sorry for him, though. His kind should be destroyed.
Welcome to Online Tonight. I am Max. Don't forget, you can give us a ring, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. We'd love to hear from you. You can also text us, text 951-395-1017. Email address is show@onlinetonight.com. And in the previous segment, we were talking about the new elephants at the Syracuse, New York Zoo. The first pair of twins born, it's very rare, less than 1% of elephants have twins, and the success rate of twins is just absolutely horrible. And we looked around to see if they have names yet, and I'll bet that the zoo is probably going to take submissions for names like they have for other animals. So the names of the two twins, from my understanding, have not been named yet. Is that correct, Miss Victoria?
I believe that's correct. I checked the zoo's website. And, you know, normally when there are baby animals, they do contests and, you know, ask for submissions for names and stuff. And I don't see anything about that. So they're probably planning a big deal for that.
Okay. And I also understand we have a question from who? Pete? Paul? Mark?
Peter in Revere, Massachusetts. which is, I believe, northeast of Boston. I'm not positive exactly, North Shore. Peter says, my Wi-Fi speed has been getting slower, but nothing has changed with my service. What's up with that?
Why is it getting slower? Well, there's tons of reasons. I mean, we can touch on a couple. Have you added, Peter, have you added a new Apple TV device, a new Roku device? Do you have new phones that have Wi-Fi? Do you have a smart TV? Do you have anything? Did you put in a new garage door opener that has the Q service? Any lights, like the Philips Hue lights or anything that communicates for your home automation over Wi-Fi? All of these things are going to take time away. In case you don't know, Wi-Fi is not the smartest technology. It does what's called device polling. So what it does is it says, okay, who is currently authorized to connect with me and my, you know, via my SSID and my password? And you then connect in, and so then it keeps a table of all of the devices that it can talk to, and it goes around the room one at a time. Do you have anything you want to share? No. Do you have anything you want to share? No. Do you have anything you want to share? No. And it goes between each device, and so it's really only talking to one device at a time. Now, it happens so fast that it seems to you that your iPhone and your iPad and your Apple TV or your Roku or your Fire Stick or whatever are all talking at the same time, because the question happens so fast that it doesn't seem like they're blocking. But the more devices that you have on a network, the slower it's going to be because of this polling technology. So that's the first thing you want to look at, is to see, hey, I have added two new phones. I added a smart TV, etc. And so those are going to slow things down. You might want to add a repeater. You might want to pull one of those items off of the Wi-Fi and use a cable. I mean, I always recommend, for things like streaming services, televisions, laptops, if you're going to watch movies, anything where you want a nice high bit rate, full quality video signal or good audio, you'll always want to plug it in. Wi-Fi is a convenience, but it doesn't give you the speed of wire. And then you don't have this interference thing. The other thing that could also slow down your Wi-Fi is they use channels. And so if your neighbor just added a high-powered Wi-Fi device and it's using the same channel, well, then they're going to get interference. Also, if you add some of the older cordless phones or a lot of Bluetooth devices, those are going to add interference. But let's just assume that's not the case, and you haven't added any additional devices, well, then maybe you got hijacked. And one way to find out if you've been hijacked is to log into your Wi-Fi router and have a look and see if there are any devices in the network list. Usually there's a section where it'll say connected devices, or it'll say network map or something like that. You want to look in there and you want to say, I don't recognize DocOck iPad. How is this on my network? And it's currently active, and I can see that in the last hour or two, depending on your router. It may not have statistics, but some routers will give you statistics and say, within the last hour or the last 24 hours, this person has uploaded and downloaded 2 gig worth of data. And if they don't belong on there, you want to kick them off. And most routers will also allow you to block them, meaning any device with this particular address. Most devices have two different kinds of addresses. They have what's called a MAC address. Think of that as your Social Security number. And then they have an IP address. Think of that as your first name and surname. So you might have a MAC address, which is like 83:19:. It's a number like that. But then for you to find it, let's say you're hosting a website on your computer or something like that, you would probably type in a 192.168.1 address or a 10.10.whatever address, because that's a lot easier to type in than that crazy long what looks like random numbers address. But all of this is converted behind the scenes for you, because the way the devices talk to each other is through their MAC address. and that you can say, I don't want any device with this MAC address to ever come on my network again. And that might be something to check to see if things are really, really slowing down for you. I did see in the news, however, that Google is having a problem with some of their Nest, N-E-S-T, Nest. Oh, thank you for the email, Peter. Greatly appreciate it. Hope everything in Massachusetts is good. Google is working on a fix to stop Nest Wi-Fi Pro routers from slowing down. They have found that the system was limiting itself to as low as 40 megabits per second, which is slow. In my case, my Wi-Fi at the office, which is weird, my office Wi-Fi is slower than my home Wi-Fi. My office Wi-Fi is 200 meg. My home Wi-Fi, because we have fiber in the home and, you know, we have more than one person living there and we had it early on, so they kept bumping up our speeds at no extra charge. We have over 500 megabytes there. We almost have a gig, but not quite. I'm not willing to spend the extra money for a gig service when I'm already so close and I have a grandfathered price. And so 40 megabits per second is so slow compared to what you might be used to. And Google is now aware that there is a problem. And there, if it isn't already available, there will be a firmware upgrade so that you will be able to get your speeds back up to what you're used to. As I was mentioning, at home, my Wi-Fi, if I'm in the farthest part of the house, I get over 260. If I'm standing right by the access point, I get over 480. So if you have a Nest and things are slowing down, it could be because those items are subject to this bug that Google is going to be fixing anytime soon. People ask me, why do you always talk about Apple all the time? Well, I used to be the educational service technician for Southern California universities and school districts, and then I later worked for Steve Jobs at Next. So I am I'm a fan. I'm a big Apple fan, and so I like to keep my fingers and my ears and things like that on the pulse of Apple because I have a lot of gear, Apple gear as well as Windows gear. I have and Linux gear here, especially Raspberry Pi. So I have all of that, but in the morning when I'm having my my cup of coffee and I want to see what's going on in technology, I always head over to some Apple-based website first. This one comes from Mac Rumors. Apple will be partnering with I never get this right, so let me find the exact TSMC. I always want to say TMSC, like trademark, but that's not it. It's Taiwan Semiconductor something company. TSMC has said they're going to be building a $12 billion plant in Arizona, and it should be online as early as 2024. And Apple has already said, hey, we will be buying chips from you. Also, I believe a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago, TSMC said we're going to also be building another factory in Washington State. So two West Coast facilities, not too far from Apple. In fact, if you look at the mileage between where the factory is and Apple's headquarters, the distance between the Arizona and the Washington one are very close in distance. It would take you the same number of hours to drive between both locations, I believe. So Apple has committed to buy the new chips that will be coming out of Arizona from their chip partner, TSMC. There has been some, it's not really been a complaint, but somebody took the time to find out, hey, the new Apple TV that we talked about a week or two ago, the 64 gig and the 128 gig Apple TV features the A15 Bionic chip, which is the same chip that was in the iPhone 13, I think, and some of the iPads. But somebody took the time to go and look at it and check it out, and they found out that one of the CPU cores was disabled. So instead of having five cores, it only has four cores. Instead of having six cores, it only has five cores. And so they went in there and they said, well, but for what Apple TV is doing, it's probably not going to make really that much difference because it's just a streaming device and a game thing. When Apple decides to take gaming seriously on the Apple TV with Apple Arcade and some AAA titles, they're going to not want to have these disabled type of chips in there. So there you go. Nothing to fret. I'm Max, online tonight. More Apple news coming up. Stay tuned. Bookmark this. This is where we give you a bookmark that you might find interesting, that you might want to use. I can't believe that it's less than a week to Thanksgiving, which means the sales are... I always thought the sales were supposed to start the day after Thanksgiving, but apparently everybody wants your money now. So a bunch of deals are available now, as well as on the Friday after Thanksgiving. So you have time. There are some fantastic deals that have been collected from our friends over at techradar.com. If you head over to techradar.com, all one word, techradar.com/deals, you're going to find some great deals on gadgets, games, and more. They have everything from PC deals to earbud deals to graphics card deals. The list could go on and on and on. Some of them are available now, and some of them you have to wait until Friday or Saturday. So head over there to check it out. This hour's bookmark this, techradar.com/deals.
This show looks just as good with or without your 3D glasses. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
It is Max. Thank you so much for joining us. We greatly appreciate it. You can give us a call, 1-800-39-ONLINE. 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. We take your text and emails. Text us at 951-395-1017. And email, our email address is show@onlinetonight.com. We just talked a little bit about some of the deals that might interest you for the holidays, and you might be sending some of those gifts. Our friends over at CNET have taken the time to see what is the best way to ship your gifts this holiday season. Should you use UPS, FedEx, or USPS? You never know which one is better. And so there is a good outline there where you might want to... What I like to do, because I don't just like to send gifts to people. I like to visit people during the holidays. See, when I was a little kid, Christmas Eve, one of the reasons my parents would never let us open a Christmas present on Christmas Eve was because we weren't home. Christmas Eve, we would visit 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 relatives and special friends' house. I remember we used to go over to this German couple's house. They weren't related. I don't know how my parents knew them. And the reason why it sticks out in my mind is because the man of the house smoked this great smelling pipe. And then he forced his daughter to play the accordion for us every Christmas. And every Christmas you could see the angst in her face grow. As I got older and as she got older and she was forced to perform like a circus monkey, you could see that it was an obligation that she didn't care for. And as soon as she was able to move out of that house, she sure did. And I think she left that accordion behind. So we used to go and deliver things. We'd get things. We would deliver things. But the primary thing we did on the Christmas Eve was to go and visit people and give them things. Sometimes it was as simple as a bottle of wine or some baked goods that my mother made. Other times it was presents, especially for my dad's boss or my dad's brother and sister and some of the other relatives. I like doing that. I think that's the best way to do it. But sometimes you have friends or colleagues or family overseas or across the country, and you got to ship it. So the best way to do that is look at the different rates. Several companies, including USPS, has flat rate rates. And that means if it fits in a box, then you're going to be able to ship it for just a fixed price. And over at that CNET site, they took a retail ground or home delivery and they compared it going from the West Coast over to Kansas. A 5-pound box via USPS is going to cost you around $17. UPS, that same box, is going to cost you around $32. And FedEx, it's going to cost you around $34. As the package gets bigger and bigger and weighs more and more, an 18 by 18 by 18 box at 15 pounds is going to cost you $90 to ship that via USPS. $68 via UPS. Hey, that's a big savings if you compare it to USPS. And it's going to, that same box is going to cost you $75 over at FedEx. So you want to get the best bang for your buck if you're going to ship things around. And one of the best ways to do that is to head over there and look at the shipping guide over at CNET.com and see if that's going to help you save some money while you ship your presents in time for the holidays. Lego has, we had mentioned this previously, that Lego had disconnected their Mindstorm product. And I was doing some more research. I called some of my friends over there and I was asking, hey, are they going to come out with another series or something like that? Because there's a lot of little independent, I have trouble with robot kits, but I don't have any trouble with the Lego Mindstorm. So I kind of reached out to my friends and originally it was developed for MIT and teaching robotics and kids and adults like that, how robotic systems work. And I said, hey, what's the plan going forward? And everyone that I asked, the plan was eBay markets. Lego has said they're not going to make them anymore. However, you can go to their website and you can say, hey, don't cancel it. We really want to buy it. But if you are really into the craft and you still want to get them now while you can. There are tons of kits available on eBay and other sites like that. So if you're missing your Mindstorm already, there are choices. Online tonight. Stay tuned.
For the phone number, it's 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546.
Online tonight.
Hello. Hey.
Hello.
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 Hey, everybody.
Hello there.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hello. Hi, and how are you?
And now, from the craziest city on the planet, this is Online Tonight, on the air toll-free at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. And now, the host of Online Tonight, Max.
Welcome in to Online Tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. I am Max, and this is Online Tonight, where we talk about technology, pop culture, just animals, fun stuff, whatever you're into, whatever I'm into. We're going to tackle your tech questions or comments, what tech's working for you, what tech's not working for you, or if you're into video games or movies, I want to hear from you about that. I also just enjoy normal kind of cool stuff or geeky stuff, so I'm always interested in sharing with you those things as well as hearing what you're into. And the best way to let me know what you like or don't like is calling us, 1-800-39-ONLINE. 1-800-396-6546 is the toll-free telephone number. We also accept text and email. Text us at 951-395-1017. And our email address is show@onlinetonight.com. Every year, we head over to CES, and we see things that usually are consumer products and that are going to be released into the market mid-year or towards the fall in time for the holidays. So what you're looking at in the store shelves right now, we saw back in January, because those companies are trying to excite the buyers, the Best Buys, the Targets, the independent electronics shops, to say, hey, you know, this is a cool thing that your customers are going to want. This is what it does. And they'll sit down and have meetings of quantity, like how many they can produce and how many stores they can deliver it to. And it's a business thing. It's only for tradespeople that are in the electronics business, whether they're buyers or manufacturers, and the press to talk about them to help create market awareness for, you know, what you may eventually end up in the store. Now, there's always some other kind of technology that they highlight that you're never, ever going to see, or that you think you're never going to see. An example of that is when Jennifer interviewed Osimo, the $10 million Honda robot. I don't think we're ever going to see those in our houses, washing our dishes or cooking our dinners or vacuuming our floors. And another thing that we saw at CES were these, for the lack of a better word, drone taxis. They look like four-bladed drones. And the idea was that you were going to just get in there, a completely automated system, no driver, and you're going to say, I need to go from here to there. And it seemed like a fantasy. It seemed very much like one of my favorite cartoons growing up, the Jetsons, right? So many people have said, back in the 50s, by the 1990s or the 2000s, we're going to have flying cars. Well, here we are in 2022. We have no flying cars. Or do we? As I was excited to see that a Bay Area company has announced the very first route for a commercial flying taxi between Newark Airport and I'm not sure exactly where it goes from there. But you're going to be able to get on and off at Newark, and you're going to be able to take this drone taxi to wherever you want to go. I honestly thought that when I first heard of this launch that it wasn't going to be in the U.S. because the FAA restrictions are so tight and things like that. I thought, wow, this is something that I'm looking forward to, and they're not going to test it here. But a Bay Area company convinced the East Coast that they're going to let you do that. And I believe that it is still under the FAA rules. And so you're still going to have like a pre-check before you get on the thing. From the limited reading that I've done on it, I was just so excited to see it that I wanted to throw that in there because I'm a big fan of CES. We go every year. We're going to go again in January this year. And we're going to look for things like that, and we're going to find out. One of the interesting things that I did find, I did find the answer. It goes from Newark Airport, the United Hub at Newark, to downtown New York. And it's a 10-minute trip as the crow flies. This is why this is means something to me. I have my own drone. It takes me 3 hours, 3 hours to charge up the battery for 15 minutes worth of airtime. So I can only fly my drone for 15 to 18 minutes before it comes crashing to Earth. Actually, my drone is smarter than that. When it gets a low battery warning, it comes back and lands at my feet. But I'm concerned about weight and power and how long these things are. What if there's a gigantic headwind and you can't make it to New York in 10 minutes? I'm sure they have all that figured out. I'm not going to be the first one to try it out. Something I was one of the first ones to try out was the Segway. I love the Segway. When we were at Disney World, I convinced the Epcot Segway tour people to open an additional space for me so that I could go on my 3-day visit. Normally, you had to book it a month in advance. But see, I didn't know that, or I would have done it. And so when I got there and I found out about it, I immediately went and I said, oh, you know, please, we're here to interview the Imagineers for one of our other shows. And it would really mean a lot to me if you could just find me a spot, or if there's a cancellation, even a last minute cancellation at 7 o'clock in the morning. If somebody says, I'm sorry, we're not going to make it, I'll still pay full price. I don't want any give you, I don't want any charity here or any, you know, giveaways. You've been so generous with everything else. I am happy to pay, and I will take a last minute spot. So I get a call the night before, and they say, well, we opened up a spot for you, and be here at 7:45 at Epcot at this door, and we will segue. And I got to segue all around. And then for my birthday or Christmas or anniversary or whatever it was, my wife got me a Segway tour of a California coastline. It's not the whole coastline because it's a 400-mile state, but a nice little chunk where we got to go around the little market and then down onto the paths by the beach and watch the waves crash and the sunset and all that stuff. And Miss Victoria even had her foot rolled over by the trainer leader guy. One of the complaints about the Segway is you have to stand up. Not everybody can stand up. Like my mother-in-law probably couldn't stand that long. My father probably couldn't stand that long. I'm sure there are other people who are on their feet all day doing something, and the last thing they want to do for recreation is to get on a Segway and stand up more. Volkswagen has solved this problem for you, and it's even better if you're a Star Trek fan. They have come up with a captain's chair, a Star Trek captain's chair that goes 12 miles per hour. And so if you have been hesitating from going on one of those Segway tours, I'm considering buying like 4, 5, 6 of these things and see if I can offer Star Trek's chair tours in my area. I think that would be a lot of fun. There are some other brands out there, the hoverboards I've never had success with, and some other kind of cool personal transport products. If you have experience in those, let me know. I would love to hear from you. What is your favorite type of transport? 1-800-39-ONLINE. I am Max, your humble host here on Online Tonight. More coming up. Stay tuned. All right, Online Tonight, Geek Speak, where we take a tech term and we try to turn it into understandable English for you. I try, don't always succeed, but I'm hoping to average at least 85 to 90%. Earlier, we talked about Wi-Fi, and some people don't know what the tech term SSID stands for, so I thought I would share that with you. It stands for Service Set Identifier. And is basically your network name. If you turn on your laptop Wi-Fi or your smartphone Wi-Fi, you might notice that there's a bunch of names. And you want yours to have a unique name. Some people are creative and we'll call it Vlad the Impaler. Or some will use a company name like we use our company name on Online Tonight or something like that. So you know what network you want to connect to. And then you should be presented with a password. But that is made possible through your SSID or Service Set Identifier. It is basically the network name that appears in your Wi-Fi list. So if you're in your router and it asks you for the SSID, well, now you know that SSID equals the name that will appear in your Wi-Fi menu so that you know which one to connect to. And that is this hour's Geek Speak.
If redness, swelling, or irritation occurs, increase your listening time by 1 hour per day. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
All right, one of the things we like to do right before the holidays is we like to go to our local theme park parks and check out to see their holiday overlays or their redos or anything like that. And we had a chance last week to go to Disneyland and check out what they have done to Haunted Mansion with the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay. But we were very excited this year because over at It's a Small World, they have been doing the Christmas overlay for or a holiday overlay because several different holidays are represented inside of that attraction. But we were very excited to go and see it because we got a little hint that something new was there this year that had never been done before, to the degree where they even went to doctors and to actual people that had this challenge, this physical challenge, and they did measurements and they went to different groups to say, how do you feel about our interpretation and representation of this ailment? I don't call it an ailment because if they can beat me at basketball, then they are a better person than I am, at least in that sport. What am I talking about? I am talking about It's a Small World has added some of the characters in wheelchairs. And they went to a lot of trouble. They didn't just, put together a wheelchair or take one off the shelf. Obviously, you can't take one off the shelf because the people inside It's a Small World are probably 1/4 or 1/5 the size of a normal person. And if they're actually representing children, then that scale might be different, even more different than that. And so they took the time to go and talk to the CEO and president of Disability Inn and some other nonprofit groups to find out, is this look good? Is this accurate? And we weren't sure what kind of scenes they were going to be in. If you know about It's a Small World, you've got people on magic carpets hanging over the boats. You've got people dancing. You have people spinning. You have a lot of different characters in there doing various things. And I said, it makes sense to me if they put them in the dancing scene. And I was looked at like I was crazy. Well, I'm probably a little on the edge in some cases. But I thought this makes sense if people in a wheelchair can have track events or basketball, soccer. I've seen all kinds of cool events for people in wheelchair. There's nothing stopping them from dancing. In fact, at my high school, at one of our spring dances, one of my buddies who was in, he broke his leg playing football and he was in a wheelchair, went to the dance, danced around just fine in a wheelchair. And I said, this makes sense to me. This is where they should be. And I was correct. And so the character is in a wheelchair standing next to 3 or 4 other people and dancing and singing to bring you holiday cheer. And hopefully it'll do that, especially if you're also in the same situation. You might be able to go and enjoy yourself and see yourself represented in a holiday setting. More Disneyland news. It's a case of deja vu for me, in a way, because back in the day when I was younger, grew up in Southern California, went to Disneyland a lot, one of the things I remember when you went through Frontierland and came around past the Horseshoe Cafe, and then you were making your way to, you pass Pirates and go by that path, and then you would be on your way over to Jungle Cruise. This was before Indiana Jones was even built. There was a treehouse, and it was known as the Swiss Family Robinson Treehouse. And it was just kind of tucked up this against the side, and you would go in on the left, and you would go up the tree, and then you would go around the different little rooms and look out the little different windows. It was like a giant treehouse. And then you would come down the left-hand side, and you would exit, and then you would head over to Jungle Cruise. It was kind of a nice, fun little entertaining bypass. If you didn't want to just walk straight from Pirates to the Jungle Cruise, you could just kind of check out this treehouse. Well, a few years has passed, obviously, and then they decided to make it into the Tarzan treehouse, and they completely redid it to the point where they put the entrance in the middle of the pathway. So there was a giant log, a tree log there, when you would go up the windy steps, and then you had to go across a rope bridge to get over to the redone Swiss Family Treehouse, right? And then you would exit. There was only one entrance, and that was in the middle of the pathway, and then you went across the rope bridge, and then you came down, and you came out basically the same exit that you did before. Well, earlier this year, they put a scrim around the treehouse, and they took out that entrance so the pathway would be clear again and not a hindrance and a hazard for people to go around. So that was all nicely redone and cleaned up, and the pathway is beautiful, so you can get to where you want to go. If you're on your way to Haunted Mansion, no problem. You want to go down the path over to Pirates, no problem. And everybody wondered, what are we going to do with this treehouse? Well, Disney finally announced on the 10th, 11th, 12th, or whatever, in a press release, we are going to rename the Tarzan treehouse to the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse. treehouse. So a case of deja vu. Now, they promise it's going to be a little bit different. There's going to be a music room, and there's going to be an astronomy room where you can kind of see new things. And that could be kind of fun.
Hey, Max?
Yeah.
Did you hear the latest Pirates news? You know those movies you like with Jack Sparrow?
You mean Captain Jack Sparrow?
Oh, of course.
What about it?
Margot Robbie was going to make a female-led pirate movie, and she said Disney has decided they don't want to do it.
Oh, so no. It's horrible. Terrible. Online tonight. Stay tuned.
Online Tonight is live and on the air at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546.
Online Tonight.
Okay, explain.
I can't. I don't know how he's doing it.
You're not going to do anything about that?
What am I going to do, huh? Broadcast her over the internet?
.357 Magnum, the original point-and-click interface. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
Welcome to Online Tonight. I am Max. Thank you so much for joining me. I want to hear from you. 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. Don't forget, we also take text and email to make it convenient and easy for you. I think talking on the phone is a little easier. But if you just want to jot down something very quickly, you can reach us via text 951-395-1017. Email address is show@onlinetonight.com.
We do have a text waiting.
Oh, great. Thank you.
This came in from Martin in Milwaukee. He says, I heard you talk earlier about Wi-Fi being slow, and you've always said wired is best. But how do I get wiring to my new smart TV?
Great question, Martin. And I recently saw something that I thought would work out very well. Initially, I was hesitant. I thought, oh, it's going to be slow. But based on the testing that I saw, it was actually really good, almost Ethernet wire speed, not gigabit, but very close. I was very excited to see it. And it is a product from Comtrend called the GCA, that's G as in goat, C as in Charlie, A as in alpha, -7000. And what it does, if you're like my house, I don't know when your house was wired, but if you're building a new house, definitely have every possible wall, if you can afford it, wired for Ethernet. But you probably put your TV in a similar place that I did, because I can't interact with you, Martin. You didn't call. You sent me this text or email. I have to guess, and so I'm going to share with you what's at my house. I have a TV Nook, and behind my TV Nook is multiple power outlets, an Ethernet jack, and a coax connection. And the beauty about my house is that all of my coax connections and my Ethernets are all what they call home-runned. They are all tied together in a box in a closet upstairs, right next to where my router comes in from the phone company or the fiber provider. So it's easy to get those things together. Some cable, satellite or cable, will be a home run or collected into a box at the outside of your house, which is probably the farthest away from your router. But if you have a home run like that near your router and it's coax, you can use this Comtrend pair. It comes in a pair. One end, you plug in, you screw on the coax cable, even comes with the cable. You plug in the power, and then you take an Ethernet jack, and that Ethernet jack can go directly into your TV, or in my case, it goes into a little switch, because that way I can put wired into my Apple TV, I can put wired into my television, I can put wired into my Denon, I can put wired into my Roku, because I only buy Rokus that have an Ethernet jack, which are almost impossible to get these days. And then you find that matching coax cable. They're usually labeled. If the house was built in the last 20 years, it'll probably say den or living room or entertainment room. And then you use the adapter on that end, the coax adapter on that one. You plug in power, so it needs to be near an outlet somewhere. And then you extend that Ethernet jack into your house switch or directly into the router, and you'll have much faster, much more reliable connection than if you were using Wi-Fi. Again, as long as the internet provider doesn't go down, but it's the best, absolute best way to consume any kind of media content is via wire, because it is so much more efficient. It is not prone to interference from cell phones and neighbors. And it's, as they say in Boston, it's wicked fast. So hopefully that answered your question, Martin. If you don't have a coax nearby, we can talk about mesh Wi-Fi or some other technologies. But hopefully you have a coax there, and then you can just check out this Comtrend.
We have another question.
Okay.
This one comes from Melanie in San Francisco. She says, I hear references to older Apple products as either vintage or discontinued. Do these terms mean the same thing?
No. The short answer is they do not mean the same thing. Apple maintains a list of older products. This is coming from our friends over at Mac Rumors. I'm just going to read it verbatim. This article came out earlier in the month. Apple maintains a list of older products that it considers vintage or obsolete, with former products being added to the list all the time. You may remember that a few months ago, well, now I'm not quoting the website anymore, but a few months ago, Apple discontinued the iPod Touch family officially. Vintage products, this is where people get confused. A vintage product is one where Apple has stopped selling it, like the iPod Touch, but it was within the last 5 years or less. So as an example, the iPod Touch is vintage until 2027. After that, the parts will not be available. That is then considered an obsolete product, and an Apple service provider or the Apple store can no longer get parts for it, and they will not fix it in most circumstances, because the product doesn't exist new anymore. So that's kind of the distinction. Vintage means that Apple stopped offering it for sale within the last 5 years, and you may or may not be able to get parts. This is still iffy, because if they don't sell the product anymore, they're not incented to stock replacement parts. But they have committed that they will do their best effort, depending on chip supply and component availability. They will make an effort within that five years period of time to offer service parts to their partners and through Apple themselves. After 7 years, all bets are off. So if you have that 2012 MacBook Pro i7 that's still humming along just beautifully, and all of a sudden the graphics chip on the motherboard goes bad, you are not getting that fixed from an Apple authorized service center or Apple. You're going to have to buy a used one somewhere. And there are other companies out there that offer obsolete Apple products parts so that you can fix, you know, the things that you like or valuable. But in some cases, the effort of fixing it and how long it's going to last from then on, you might be better off buying one of those $799 MacBook Airs or a $1,000 MacBook Air, just because of the newness of it, the support you're going to get, the features you're going to get from the operating system. So it's a balancing act. Hopefully that answered your question, Melanie. Apple products that were discontinued in 2022, if you're interested, I think I have a list for that. Let's just pop in and peek. I was looking at that for someone else recently. Let me see if it shows a list. The 27-inch iMac was stopped being sold this year. The iPod Touch, which I already mentioned, was also stopped this year. The Apple Watch Edition which was the absolute highest end Apple Watch that you could buy. The Apple Watch Edition has now been replaced with the all new Apple Watch Ultra, but the Apple Watch Edition was, let's say, canned. The original Apple TV HD, the one from 2015, that one was also discontinued for sale. The 5-watt power adapter. And if you're interested in a list, I believe you can go to the Apple website and check that out, or you can head over to one of your favorite Mac news sites and search for discontinued Apple products. Something I found very interesting, which doesn't happen very often, but when I worked for Steve Jobs, that was at Next. And then, as you know, Apple bought Next and Steve became the interim CEO. And one of the very first things that Steve Jobs announced when he came back to Apple was a $150 million partnership with Microsoft. Microsoft said, we promise that we're going to continue to make Office available for the Mac operating system, because people were worried. Because that suite interoperates really well between the Windows version and the Mac version. They even had a development office right there in Silicon Valley, so they could work closely with the Apple engineers so that they could make sure everything was functioning correctly on the Mac operating system and still compatible with the Windows version. But you don't hear an awful lot about Microsoft doing things, you know, for Apple, because in a way they're still competitors. But Microsoft wants to be friendly, and they don't want people switching to the Mac operating system, especially because so many people have iPhones, so many people have iPads. And so Microsoft recently rolled out a new feature in Windows 11 for their Photos app, their equivalent of the Photos app in Windows 11. It will now synchronize with your cloud photos. So if you're on your phone and you have those automatically uploaded, we talked about how bad that is for your battery, but if you don't care and you like having a backup of your photos on the cloud and you use a PC, Windows 11, at home, you can now just bring those right in. It will synchronize perfectly with your iCloud version of Photos right in the built-in version of Photos on Windows 11. So that was very exciting. I was very excited about that. And just very quickly, if you bought a new iPad, a new AirPod 2, I believe the second generation AirPods, and you're having problems with it, you're not the only one. In fact, the problem has been so bad that Apple fired their manufacturing partner of that group of AirPods. So if you're having trouble with them, take them into an Apple store. They'll check the serial number and they'll replace it for you. They won't tell you why, but they will. Online Tonight. Stay tuned. Online Tonight, bookmark this, where we share a website that you might be interested in. This particular time of year, the thing people are most interested in are, what is the best way to cook our turkey or our ham or whatever it is that we're going to have for our Thanksgiving dinner? I don't think they cover geese, and I think geese or goose is primarily a Christmas thing, right? I don't really know who eats goose anymore, but one of the big turkey providers is Butterball. So head over to butterball.com/how-to, where you can find out everything about choosing and preparing a Thanksgiving turkey. In our own household, we're having a debate right now about how we are going to cook our turkey. The last 2 years, I think we're fairly successful, but Miss Victoria would like to try something different. And one of her immediate concerns was, do I have a pan big enough for this? Well, why don't we use the pan that we used that was successful last year? But what are your thoughts? Are you leaning more towards the way we did it before and trying a new brine method? Or do you still want to do the broken back, squish the bird?
I think we will compromise. We're going to try a dry brine this year instead of the big baggie full of liquid, mm-hmm. which is very awkward. And we will still cut the turkey up the way we did last year because it's a little bit easier with the serving of the pieces. You still have to cut the breast up at the end, but the legs and the thighs will be separated.
All right. So a nice compromise between the two systems that we wanted to. If you want to try something completely different or you want to make sure that you do it the same way that you did last year, the bookmark is butterball.com/how-to. That is this hour's bookmark this.
Online tonight.
Genetically modifying turkeys so they have five drumsticks. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
It is Max, and we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-39-ONLINE. 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. Email show@onlinetonight.com and text messages 951-395-1017. Don't forget that if you missed any portion of Online Tonight, you can head over to onlinetonight.com and you can subscribe to the podcast. Check out the archives where we outline each hour that we do and any of the products that we discuss. Miss Victoria will put up the coax cable from Comtrend, so that if you were listening and it's something you might be interested in, you can just easily go to the show notes, check it out, and see if that's something that you want to do. We were just talking about food and turkey, and my understanding is that we waste a lot of food. Not us necessarily, because we usually buy a smaller turkey or we buy a smaller ham, and then we make pea soup out of the ham later, or we make turkey sandwiches. But apparently, especially this time of year, a lot of food goes to waste.
And that's right. And scientists have studied how to reduce food waste by storing food better. And in particular, produce is something that gets wasted a lot. And those are some of the things that we use in our Thanksgiving meal. But these are the things that work against you in food storage. Time, oxygen, moisture, which increases microbial growth, and light, which causes some foods to ripen faster. And one of the things that you sometimes buy too much of at around the holidays, if you like mashed potatoes, you buy those big bags of potatoes, and then you don't use them all. Well, to keep your potatoes from going bad, you should put them in a breathable bag. Now, they come in those really dirty kind of mesh bags, but you can transfer them into your own washable mesh bag that you can pick up at the store and reuse. And that way, you don't, every time you move the bag, it doesn't kind of flake and get stuff all over the pantry or whatever.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So you're telling me that people don't cook all their potatoes at the same time like we do? We bake all of the potatoes at the same time, and then we give out the ones for our guests, and then we keep the other ones, and we keep them for potato bread or potato pancakes. People don't do that?
Well, it depends on the size of your family or the size of the group that you're making stuff for, whether you're shopping the sales and how big the bag of potatoes is that you get, because some of these bags of potatoes are really big. And maybe you're going to do boil the potatoes for mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving, but then maybe you're going to have a steak dinner the following week, so you're going to have some potatoes that you want to bake later. So you're not necessarily going to use all your potatoes. I find that potatoes don't stay good for very long. They start to sprout or turn green or something like that. But if you keep them in a cool, dark place in a breathable bag, that will help. And never, ever store potatoes anywhere near bananas. Bananas hyper-ripen anything they come near. So if you ever want to ripen something fast, you put it in a bag with a banana. Here's a tip on keeping your leafy greens fresh. Rinse them with vinegar and water and then dry them thoroughly. You can layer them between paper towels in a container in your fridge and they will last longer. And the last one is, if you want to keep herbs fresh, you probably noticed that I did this in our refrigerator with the cilantro, is you cut the end of the stems and you put them in water like you would flowers in a vase. and then you cover with either a jar lid if they're short enough and you have a big jar, or you can just put a baggie over the top and you put the entire thing with the water into the refrigerator to keep your herbs fresh.
Very nice. Thank you for those tips. That will help you reduce your food waste during the holiday, and that way you can feel good about your purchases. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of Online Tonight, you can head over to onlinetonight.com, subscribe to the podcast, and there's also a contact us there. But don't forget, email and text works all week. Stay tuned.